Welcome to this Christmas special of On a Good Day with me, Elizabeth Callahan.
And me, Julia Ajay. This is a podcast that looks at brain injury and its impact on all involved.
On this episode, we'll be looking at On a Good Day's 12 Days of Christmas with Brain Injury to help us all have a good day this festive season.
Now, Christmas time can be extremely stressful for us all, but for someone with a brain injury and their family, it can cause additional pressures. This will be our 15th year of celebrating Christmas following my husband Hector's brain hemorrhage.
And it'll be our 6th year since Paul had his stroke. So combined, Julia and I, this Christmas, will have had 20 years of Christmases living with brain injury. So in this episode, we'll be sharing some of the things that we've learned along the way that work and some of those which are a little more challenging.
As Elizabeth and I discovered when discussing this episode, everyone has different priorities at Christmas and different ways of celebrating. We all do Christmas in a unique way, and we also acknowledge that for some people, it can be a really difficult time of year.
This year, we will be hosting Christmas for the first time since Paul had his brain injury. So it's a fairly big moment for us. We'll be having 12 of us over, 12 of us all together, of my family, and navigating that. And I will definitely be picking Julia's brain for this because, as I have learned in our chats, she is the hostess with the most S and has been doing so many Christmases, hosting it at her lovely family home with lots and lots of people, far more than 12, probably double that. It can be a little bit overwhelming, particularly as we've recently had our renovations. So I'm hoping all the electrics are going to hold out. I've just worked out how to use the hob, which is always good. And the oven, I'm kind of getting there with it. But
I think those two things will be really useful, actually, Elizabeth.
So do I.
A hob and an oven will definitely be very useful.
It has been a little hairy over the last few weeks. And if I'm honest, I haven't done a lot of planning so far. So, I mean, going on to that, well, our first day of Christmas is planning. And Julia, there's a lot of planning that's gone into your Christmases over the past few years since Hector's brain injury, and obviously before that as well. Tell us a bit about what you do at Christmas.
So there is a lot of planning, but equally, I'm not the most organised person in the world. So maybe it's kind of planning with a twist of chaos.
That sounds very much like myself. So.
But I think that we do have a tradition of getting together at Christmas time, and different people obviously over the years have had different roles to play in that. And we're still in the family home where I remember coming when my grandparents were here as children. So it's a very long tradition of Christmases here, and many different people in the family have hosted it over the years. So I think that kind of brings a momentum to it almost, that we all love Christmas and it is a family time when we get together. And so in terms of planning, there are some sort of set pieces that I think we know we're going to put in place, which almost helps to get the day sorted. I guess some of the traditional things like decorating the house, putting the Christmas tree up, having Christmas dinner. We also go to chapel on Christmas morning as a family. We've been able to maintain some of those things, most of those things, despite Hector being ill for all of that time or having had his brain injury. And, you know, I love the fact that there's that consistency. And that for me brings a lot of joy that we can still look forward to those things. With planning, I think what I do in my head, and also with bits of paper and backs of envelopes, is thinking about how many people are coming, which varied over the years. Thinking about what that entails in terms of a meal and other meals too, because we have people stay over. So it's not usually just Christmas dinner. It's like having to think about what people might have on Christmas Eve or I mean, Boxing Day's leftovers, isn't it? But and also where other people might do things and pick things up. So delegation.
I mean,
who's going to help?
Absolutely. It's a mammoth task, right? Because sometimes you have over 20 people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coming to your house and they're staying a few days. I mean, it sounds exhausting. And I can imagine it is, quite frankly, especially for Hector.
Well, I think that lots of people, everyone helps. So it's certainly not me doing it on my own. But yes, I think that we've adjusted the pace of how that works now because we have other things to take into account.
So
how are you thinking about your planning? I mean, where are you with yours?
Again, I am trying to do a little bit of delegating, but, you know, the plans aren't necessarily totally laid out yet, but mine are just coming for Christmas Day. So I think that makes things a little bit easier. My mum has made a Christmas cake. So that's that bit sorted. And I've asked my sister to bring some cheese and biscuits, and she is also going to do the potatoes and then just bring them on a tray and just stick them in the oven when she gets there, because it is mainly going to be me cooking. I think, you know, I will get Paul to do something. Paul does love cooking. And actually tonight he made a rather nice prawn curry, and which has very much surprised me, if I'm honest. So pleasantly surprised. Yeah, it was nice. I think the kids liked it as well. So I will maybe get him to do some starter-y canapés, which he used to love doing. So it's kind of him re-remembering how to do those, because I'm not sure he's done them in the last 5 years. And then that gives him a task to look forward to. But other than that, you know, we've got young children. They just love opening their presents. There will be excitement overload. And then actually people will come a bit later, I think. So I'm kind of looking at a shorter time frame, which I think helps. My parents and my siblings are quite conscious that it is quite a lot. We have kind of, our house is still in renovation process. And we'll make sure that we have plenty of champagne, I think, is the key.
Well, I think with planning on as our first day of Christmas, strategies for that are about taking that time to plan and to give yourself time to plan. And also, as you mentioned there with your parents, talking about expectations of other people with that planning, I think is really important. And, you know, linking it back to executive function and sometimes some of the difficulties that people with brain injuries might have, particularly with planning and planning ahead. I think I do see this as an area that is really good to take some time to do, to relieve some of the stress when things actually, you know, when the big day arrives, or, you know, different things that happen before that, so that some of those shared responsibilities or areas where our partners can take part, we have thought about and planned and involved them in that, and that is a little extra that needs doing.
Yeah, I think what I'll probably do is write down a list that I can put up on either on the fridge or somewhere where he can run through the day, or, you know, do a kind of schedule so that he knows what's going on, when, what he's doing. For Paul, he does struggle with remembering lots of processes. And, you know, I often have to tell him about an event or something several times. So if it's got it written down, I can be like, if he asks what's happening at whatever time, I can be like, revert to the list. Having something visual really helps, certainly for us.
Yes, and I also think that realistically plans change, and, you know, people visiting can change if something arises for other people, and so communicating those changes of plans is also really important as one of the strategies to again keep everyone on the same page and working together. So making sure that those plans are updated and that the communications of those are updated as well.
So moving on to our second day of Christmas, which is the whole idea of the financial burden that people can find with Christmas, which, you know, particularly at the moment with the cost of living, we're all feeling the pinch a little. And when somebody in the family has had a brain injury, often that impacts your income. That's certainly our experience. So it's getting that grasp of finances. But where is it going to go? Where are your priorities? Gifts, you know, the dinner, the activities. Tell us a bit more about how you've approached that, Julia.
Yeah, I think it's always a difficult one, isn't it? And certainly when Hector first had his brain hemorrhage and was in hospital, it was something that was very difficult to navigate because of passwords and permissions and bank accounts. And, you know, it was hugely stressful. And then being able to manage finances after that and the kind of roles changing a bit in terms of managing all of that, I think has, you know, meant that there are some differences in the way that we do that. So I guess, I mean, we were talking about the sharing of lots of responsibility for many people, that some of the planning of the spend at Christmas is with us or those, you know, the sort of tricky bits of it. And that's something that I think can put a strain on our relationships. The way that I would deal that with that is to try and talk to Hector as much as possible about what those plans are and agreeing how much we might spend on presents for the children. I think that's really important. And also making sure that we're, again, saving and planning ahead so that we're not caught short with last minute costs.
I think the whole communicating on what you're going to get, what gifts you're going to get, and how you're going to deal with that expenditure is really important, especially when you come from families that have kind of different ideas on gifting. It is kind of finding that happy medium between not going too crazy and, you know, getting some lovely, lovely gifts.
And I have also over the years had some conversations with the children, Elizabeth, you know, actually talking about their expectations, where they might be out of line with what the reality is going to be. Now, I think that's probably very common for lots of families with children. But actually, I think that's important. Sometimes it can be difficult conversations, but actually trying to manage those expectations of everyone, including ourselves, and sometimes as well, by talking about it, avoiding the situation where overspending happens, which I think can be a risk as well for all of us, but also where there might be a lack of financial awareness, that sometimes can be a problem.
Actually, we're getting on to our third day of Christmas here, Julia, because it is all about gifting. And, you know, we've picked up on so many of those points already. I remember you telling me this lovely story about when Hector first went and bought some Christmas gifts for the family. Tell us a bit about that.
After Hector first had his brain injury, I think there was definitely a period when decision-making was really hard for him. And choosing things and discerning the difference between, you know, for example, seeing a whole rack of clothes in a shop and being overwhelmed by that, not really being able to pick something out that he might like. Or I just remember, you know, him buying us all a present. And I can't tell you what the individual presents were, but the act of making those decisions and being able to do that for each of us was really special. And I have to say that he is the best present buyer in the house.
Ooh, there we go. High praise. That's great.
Yes, he does have a reputation of being the best present buyer.
Oh, well done.
So that's definitely something that has improved dramatically over time. And I think some of the messaging that we have from the medical profession that we've talked about before, where we feel there might not be improvement or improvement stopped after a certain amount of time, I think that's one example where it didn't stop, and it you know, it really has carried on improving.
Excellent. What a great area for it to get better in. I think Paul is definitely getting more into the gifting. I mean, he is very much a gifter, but he can often go totally off budget. And there is the last minute purchases that are a little bit random. So I'm always of the opinion, keep the receipt just in case. Just in case, get a gift receipt. No harm in that. So if he does
always
go
a good idea.
What's a good idea. But yeah, his decision making has definitely got better. And actually, what was really lovely the other day, Paul and I went and did a bit of shopping together. So that was always a bit of a tradition for us that we would go and get some of the presents together. And often he'd end up buying himself more presents than other people. So he did better this time. He didn't do that this time. We managed to keep on track. But I think, you know, we didn't have as much time to do it. So, you know, we were fairly focused. It was a great way for us to spend some time together, because that can be hard for all couples, really. But particularly when, you know, someone has a brain injury, the communication can be difficult sometimes. So doing an activity together like that, and where you're kind of doing a common purpose of finding gifts for loved ones, was actually a really positive step for us.
Well, that's great. That's really brilliant to hear that. And how lovely that you've done that before Christmas, because that makes all those gifts so much more special almost, doesn't it? That they're joint presents that you've done that together with. That's beautiful. Just on gifting, the other thing that we were talking about was about gifting to other people through things like volunteering or visits to other people or inviting other people over, donations to food banks. And I think as part of our well-being at Christmas, it's important for us all to remember the bigger picture and those people out there who don't have the same opportunity as we might have, and that you know, it's really important to, I think, as well, bring the children along with that so that they understand too. And I see that as an important part of Christmas.
Yeah, that's another one of our, I think we're on to our fourth day of Christmas now.
Did we make that as a different one? Ooh.
I think, you know, in the past, Paul has volunteered at helping out at the church Christmas dinner before, which was a really positive step for him. Because it got him out volunteering and, you know, helping, giving stuff back. We often do a few things alongside the church and then with our school as well. And actually, Paul was there today helping out with my youngest's Christmas market. Although, and this is another kind of point really, is just don't try, you know, try not to overdo it, because he's really tired after that. I think he's done a lot today, and actually he's at the stage where he can admit that he is tired.
Yes, it is. It is. And actually then going on to what is our
fifth day of Christmas. We jumped the gun a bit, didn't we?
Our fifth is about purposeful activity. And you've just mentioned Paul there helping out at school. And isn't it wonderful that those activities around Christmas bring that involvement, and it isn't just doing something for the sake of it, it's contributing and being part of the school community and the family. And so what are your strategies for that purposeful activity, Elizabeth?
Well, exactly that. Get signing him up to do that. That, you know, I usually love helping out at that event, but I was working today, so I got him to do it instead. And then I've also signed him up to help with the Christmas dinner on Friday with the school. But in terms of kind of on the day, on Christmas Day, I think it is finding them something that they can really, like I was saying about Paul helping out with doing kind of canapes. I know that will really help focus him. It will give him something that he feels good about. People will enjoy it. So I think when the household is going to be so busy, and often Paul can be a bit like, well, what can I do? You know, he wants to do something, but, you know, sometimes there are limitations a little bit on that. Getting him to do something that he can do, that he's going to enjoy, and is really helpful, then I think that's really important.
Also, you said something there that I think is really important too, that actually people then will say to him, thank you, Paul. That's brilliant. Oh, lovely. And I think the danger is that if we do it all, then we get all of that. And actually, it's important that everyone has the opportunity to receive that thanks. Doing something, being involved, having purposeful activity, it's an opportunity to receive thanks as well, which I think is really important for us all. I know it's important for me, and I think it's unfair for me to receive all the thanks. So it's great to be able to share out those things, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's another part of Christmas, isn't it? It's giving thanks, it's helping, it's giving, it's coming together. So yeah, that's lovely. What does Hector do? What's his kind of thing?
He will serve drinks. That can be difficult if there's lots of people.
Yeah, that's true.
Anessie and Hector often do it as a team, which is brilliant. And again, they'll enjoy doing that together. Hector is also brilliant at bringing in all the wood and laying the fires.
That's really helpful and beautiful. Gosh, yeah. I bet your place looks
fully
so
in charge
Christmassy.
Of that. I think that on purposeful activity, it is really important to think about where each of our roles are and identifying what and agreeing ahead of time what some of those purposeful activities can be.
Good idea, just communicating that so that everybody knows what's going on. Having a part in the decision making is important.
Yes, absolutely. Not just communicating it, but also agreeing it.
Not just getting told what to do. Go and bring in the log sector. So, Julia, we are now on to our sixth day of Christmas, which, if they're doing all this purposeful activity, there's people around them, there's also going to be, and we've already mentioned it a little bit, the fatigue aspect, which so many, you know, that neuro fatigue that so many brain injury survivors suffer from. You've obviously had 15 years of Christmas Day, which can be a full on time for everybody. So how do you manage it? How does Hector manage that fatigue during the day?
Well, do you know what? I think we just manage it so much better than we used to, because I think I used to get upset if Hector wasn't always present or present at the important times. You know, we've got to be here for this particular bit. And I think I've just really relaxed about that now, because I recognise that if Hector's tired, he needs to have a break. Or if he's overwhelmed, because there's been a lot going on, he needs to have a break and a rest. And if he does that, he's going to come back refreshed. So actually, whenever that is, it's not a set time in our house, but whenever that is, it's okay, go and have a rest. But also Hector manages that himself. So often he, knowing that there's going to be a lot of people, will take himself off and have a rest before, because he knows that he will need to recharge in order to be able to converse and talk to people, and communicate as best he can, which takes a huge amount of energy.
Yeah, it really does. I think having that awareness is really powerful. And obviously he's lived with his brain injury for quite some years now, and it is learning that awareness of when you're getting tired and what is best to do and how to deal with it. I think Paul is gradually starting to really recognise those signs now himself. So I think if it does get too much or overwhelming, and it shouldn't do, because, well, it might, you know, we do have children here coming, probably will, but I think it's just knowing it's okay for him to go and sit somewhere quiet or go upstairs for a bit. And I think that's something that we'll probably discuss.
And for the rest of the family to understand. And I think our family all know now that if Hector's going to go up for a rest, then he's going up for a rest, and that's fine. And that's cool, you know, and it's not that sort of feeling that you're letting anyone down because you're not there, or, you know, I think if everyone understands that and knows why, I mean, I do think sometimes he sneaks off to watch the football, but still, you know, generally it is because of neuro fatigue.
Yeah, that sounds familiar about the football. Okay, so going on to, we have discussed this a little bit, but number seven in On a Good Day's 12 Days of Christmas. So Christmas activities. So doing stuff in the lead up to the big Christmas day. You know, it's a wonderful time of the year, but it is also hideously busy and can be quite overwhelming for somebody with a brain injury. For us, I haven't necessarily booked loads of kind of big noisy distractions, like something like Winter Wonderland in London, which is really big, is just a big no-no for us doing something like that now. We also used to travel and go to sort of Christmas markets, and you know, maybe we could still that, but it's, you know, such a busy time of year anyway, kind of fitting that thing in along with something else, I think would be quite a stretch. In recent years, we've opted for going to the Panto, like doing some of those Christmas activities, but something that's not going to be, you know, he can just sit there and enjoy it rather than having to walk about and there'd be lots of lights and distractions and noise. Is that something that you've taken into consideration?
So I do remember we went to Winter Wonderland a few years ago when the children were much younger. But what was great when we went there was that we had friends who lived nearby at the time. So there was, you know, the end was in sight. But what we normally do before Christmas too, and in fact, we're unable to do it this year, but quite often we will drive up to see friends in Chester and then go over to Manchester for a party and then come back. But it's paced. I can feel a bit of a mad dash sometimes, but actually, once we're there, it's calm and lovely. And then the next day we have a bit of time for visiting and then also go to our wonderful friend Helen's party in Manchester, which is a bit noisier, but we'll leave in good time to, again, get back and rest at our friends that we stay at Nikki and Steve's. And so it's busy, but it is paced. And I think that strategy of pacing is a really good one that we want to share, isn't it?
Yes, that's a really good point. I mean, the whole Christmas parties, it's a really good aspect of Christmas. Always lots of parties and events and get-togethers and you want to join in. But yeah, it's totally right with that strategy, is pacing it. And ourselves as well. We're carers. We're looking after other people. You know, I've got two really young kids as well, and with work and everything, it's picking those drinks or parties which maybe aren't too far away, that are more local, but and just making sure we're keeping ourselves well, because if we get sick, you know, Christmas Day could be in jeopardy.
Talking about fatigue, I mean, I think that's also for us as well, isn't it? With you know, making sure that we and other people listening who are in the same situation as us don't get overwhelmed and overtired, because then everything becomes more difficult for us as well.
Yeah, and it's okay to say no to things. So what number one? Number eight, our eighth
cooking
day of Christmas. Of course, we have touched
cooking
upon this, but I find it very mind-boggling just for you cooking for 20 people. I know it's not just you on your own, but cooking for 20 people, just the amount of stuff to get and how do you time it all?
So some of the strategies that I would share are the preparation, the food prep, and also the planning of what it is that you want to cook and how, you know, you're going to shop for it and when you're going to do it. And also, for that number of people, there's a certain element of keeping it simple, because, you know, we love a plated prawn cocktail for starters, which is very easy.
You're keeping the 80s vibes going. It's a long tradition.
80s vibes all the way. There's a reason. I might have even been 70s vibes, but there's a reason why people have prawn cocktails for starters, because they're very easy to do.
Well, you were telling me you have a trifle as well. I just love these old
Oh.
school dishes.
Yeah, trifle. Again, you can pre-prep trifle. But I think whatever people are having for their Christmas dinner, keeping it a little bit simple and not putting all of that stress on yourself for everything to be perfect. And just trying to enjoy the preparation as much as sitting down for the meal as well, I think, and creating that buzz around people being together in the kitchen, I actually love.
Yeah, but it's just keeping on track and actually getting everything in, because then you get distracted. And then especially if you've had a glass of fizz as well, it could just all go a bit downhill.
Well, yeah, that's why sometimes having other people to help a bit is a good idea to do the last finishing touches.
Yeah, I think you've touched on some really good points there. Definitely prep as much as you can, kind of the day before or in the days the lead up. Find what you can prep before. Like with us, I'm obviously getting some people to help out to bring stuff already, and then yeah, just getting organized, writing your list, and again, maybe not doing every single sauce homemade under the sun. I've already decided that we're probably going to buy our gravy.
Well, freezer's also good. Make gravy, freeze it, defrost.
Oh, there we go. Great tip. What else can you freeze that we can whack in the
Everything, not the
freezer?
trifle, but most other things.
Well, what do you put in the freezer then? Stuffing?
Peas.
Everyone puts peas in the freezer.
Actually just boiled some chestnuts, which is horrible, and frozen those to make some chestnut stuffing.
Oh, so you haven't
So,
made the chestnut stuffing yet?
no, not yet. No, but I will. Well, you can. I mean, you can freeze roast potatoes. I mean, I'm not the best at using the freezer, but it can be very, very useful.
Okay, well, there we go. That's a great tip that I'm probably going to use. Thanks for that, Julia. Christmas is all about family. A lot of the time, if you're lucky enough to have, lots of your family is still there with you. Ooh, ninth day of Christmas, families coming over. Sometimes when you get people together, there can be disagreements sometimes.
There can be. Before we go on with this discussion, though, I do want to acknowledge that not everyone has family and not everyone has people over at Christmas. And we know that many people will be spending Christmas on their own. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that, or some of Christmas on their own. And that may not be from choice. I feel very lucky and blessed that we have a big family. And it does bring to mind the people that don't have. So I do want to just acknowledge that.
Yeah, same. I feel very blessed to have my family still with me, and it's actually going to be the first Christmas where Paul hasn't had his mum. So I think it's going to be could be quite an emotional one for him actually.
Yes, it will be, won't it? And for the whole family. And I think for me, that is a strategy when tensions are running high, which invariably they do. Is actually reminding myself of how lucky we are to all be together, that whatever those tensions are they're there because we're together and because we love each other and because we've decided to share that time together. So using that as a starting point, I always feel helps me to dissipate some of that tension.
We're always glad to see each other. I don't feel, my family get together, all of us, that often. So it's a great opportunity to all come together, having them some, giving them something to do as well, because I know they, want to help out. It's just, getting them to feel like they're being part of the day as well, if they want to.
And I also think that some of the challenges for people with brain injury are same for also for older people in the family to have some quiet time to, having some of the difficulty with noise and lots of noise, especially if there's young children around. So managing that and being aware of that, I think is good to just kind of keep an eye on that a bit to. If there is space, create a bit of quiet space or time where, it's not frantic all the time and there is a chance to step out of that or to have quiet time together when everyone's asleep on the sofa, I guess.
Then also, you want to have our 10th day of Christmas is family games. You sound like, Julia, you're quite a big family game people.
Well, we are and we aren't. One of my sisters always organises a fabulous game that we just all love, where it's sort of like a Pictionary game where she gives us words. We get into teams and she gives us a word and someone in the team has to draw the picture. Then we have to guess it and everyone runs around, and it's great fun, and we do all really enjoy that, and we play it every year. But also I think what's lovely about it is because it's a team game, it takes the pressure off. Hector, you know, can still be there and be part of the team, but without having to, you know, be a person in a board game where that might be really difficult with some games. So actually having those games that are a team where it's not just one person's duty to, you know, win or play, or I think that can really be a great strategy.
Great idea. But stuff like Connect Four, things like that.
Jenga. So I think that there are specific games that will lend themselves to post-brain injury families and people, and it's finding out what they are, really, isn't it? And obviously that's going to be linked to what people have enjoyed doing before as well and what interests them. And another strategy we talked about, Elizabeth, was about being time bound and not, you know, not these games that go on forever. I'm not sure Monopoly would really be one that we would choose.
No, you need a definite end. Like Monopoly, yeah. And what, there's always arguments around Monopoly as well.
Just before we move on from games, with young children, I do remember our family kids putting on performances. Oh, they're wonderful. Oh, aren't they? They disappear off for hours to make their performance and then they come back and
I might get mine to do that.
Do their gymnastics or play or
they love it. Yeah, mine love it. And actually my brother is a very good pianist, so we'll get him to do, we'll do some carols and do some singing. We all like that sort of thing. And
lovely.
Yeah. So I think we're almost at the end. So on a good day's 11th day of Christmas. Now, this was something that I threw up, was to get some fresh air, go for a walk, get out the house, because sometimes it can get really overwhelming. Get out the house, go for a little walk, go to the park, go to the pub, maybe. That's my dad quite likes doing that. Removing yourself from the confines of the house can be really good. And also getting rid of people if you need a bit of space.
Yes, fresh air, change of scene, other people in the mix. This all dissipates tension, I think.
And get the kids, if you've got young children, for them to have a run around. Yes. And get off some of that excitement and energy, because it is so exciting, Christmas, when you're little, isn't it? It's lovely, but it can get quite a lot.
It can. And actually, on to our last 12th day of Christmas, which is something that you alluded to just now, is going to the pub. And so we actually thought that alcohol was an important thing to talk about at Christmas. Complicated, and especially as we know that many people with brain injury can't drink alcohol because of medication, and especially linked to seizures, which is in our case, but also, you know, how that's managed within a family. It can also be quite difficult in terms of those kind of family tensions if there's lots of alcohol consumed, and also some of the difficulties between one person drinking and another not. And I'll have a drink this Christmas and Hector isn't and can't drink, and I think that's hard, you know, that can be hard for us as well.
Really hard, because sometimes Christmas can become quite associated with having a drink, being merry and bright. So Paul as well, obviously he's prone to seizures, shouldn't really be drinking too much. And I think that's another realization he's starting to have, is managing that and not being like old Paul, drinking a lot and not thinking about it. He does have to think about it a lot more, pace himself. and also choose, go for options that aren't heavy on alcohol. So he did mention port the other day, and I said, no, I'm not, I don't think I'm even going to get any port in, because that is just bad idea. Port and sherry, sorry, it's not going to be at our house this year. Someone might bring it, but I think for him, Guinness or a beer, he might have a little bit of fizz, but I don't think he wants to get too much with wine and things like that, because that's, you know, it's high alcohol content, and it can, you know, really affect his executive functioning, contribute to fatigue as well. Obviously, it has further medical implications as well.
Yes. So a difficult one, but one to keep an eye on, and I think to talk about.
What is a good thing with our Christmas is most of us will be going home. So there'll be two drivers, at least, maybe three drivers. So they won't be drinking much either. He won't feel too left out.
What we also talked about coming, now having come to the end of our 12 days of Christmas, is that through all of those days of Christmas, we've got a little string of fairy lights running through all of them, which is about communication. It's something we've talked about a lot in our podcasts, in different episodes of On a Good Day, in different ways. But I think on each of those, we've stressed how important it is that we are mindful of communicating in the best way that we can with our partners, with our families, and with ourselves about what we need and what we need as a team, and as a family, to try and have the best Christmas ever.
So true, Julia. It's paramount, isn't it? It's everything. And I'm definitely not perfect with it, but finding our way. There's some things that I think I've told Paul, but perhaps haven't.
Remember that memories fail, especially after brain injury. And as I get older as well, it's good to go over plans, and you almost can't repeat things enough, I don't think.
You do have to repeat it. So at least Paul usually will take it in the third time. Now I'm getting used to it. It's, you know, just keep repeating it, get him to put it in the diary. And obviously I'll be writing my big Christmas plan.
Yeah.
That'll be from the fridge. Won't we have a fridge, by the way? Fridge isn't there.
Okay, no fridge.
New fridge. Well, we do, but it's not the nice one that's going to fit all the Christmas food in.
We'll have to do a brain injury planner.
Well, that was a plan to do the planner.
It was. Maybe we'll do a Christmas version as well.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
Mm.
There we go. Watch out for On a Good Day planner when we get some time. It's all about 2024. And I'm really excited for 2024. 2023 has been just a crazy year, and it feels like it's lasted 2 seconds. It's suddenly Christmas again, but there's so many things I've learned actually along the way, which we've discussed in most of our podcasts. But I think 2024 is always good to reflect and look at things that you can switch up or change or build upon. And communication is definitely one which I will be building upon even more.
For me, 2023 has been so exciting to finish our first season of On a Good Day and start our second. So I definitely am looking forward to more conversations with you, Elizabeth, over time, over next year. And as we look forward into the new year, we'll be coming back with lots more episodes of On a Good Day and lots more challenging and interesting conversations.
And some amazing guests as well, who just learn so much from all those specialist guests that we have, but also people's stories. That is On a Good Day's 12 Days of Christmas. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, onagood.day, and Twitter, onagood_day. You can also find us on our Facebook group. For now, have a very, very Merry Christmas. And we will see you. Well, actually, we won't see you in 2024. We've got another episode coming out at the end of the year. So make sure you listen out for that.
Merry Christmas, everyone. And thank you for listening.
Merry Christmas. And we'll see you again in 2 weeks' time. Bye for now.
Bye.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.